look and listen. If you grew up in the UK, these words, or a variation of them, should be familiar to you. Since 1967, they formed the basis of government campaigns teaching children how to cross the road safely. Everyone from Batman to Doctor Who, and even a singing hedgehog, has been involved in these campaigns. Of course, being able to interact with other road users around you is necessary to signal when and where you're moving. And a lot of this is done through body language and eye contact. In fact, a study conducted by MIT earlier this year found that 66% of pedestrians try to make eye contact with drivers when crossing the street. But what happens when you go to cross the road and there's no driver to make eye contact with? In the future, would it still make sense to tell our children to stop, look, and listen? Welcome back to Journey Makers, the podcast exploring not just what the future looks like, but how we're going to get there. Each month, we take on one of the big questions facing the future of mobility. In this episode, we're talking about the communication between people and driverless cars. And the question we're asking is, how will humans interact with self-driving vehicles? In London today, there are roughly 2.5 million drivers, alongside 1 million cyclists and an almost immeasurable number of pedestrians. And, excepting some purpose-built cycle highways and pedestrian-only areas, everyone occupies the same space. In the future, it's possible that cyclists and pedestrians will share this space with autonomous vehicles too. And this means that humans and autonomous vehicles have to be able to interact in order to read and predict each other's behaviour. Today, a human cyclist will stick out their arm to indicate that they're turning left or right. When the road users around them have received this signal, they can safely make a turn. But will this kind of signal work in a driverless world? Will a cab understand what the cyclist means? And how will the cyclist know that an autonomous vehicle has seen them? This is just one example of the way cabs and human road users will have to communicate. Humans and autonomous vehicles will need to interact when setting off at traffic lights, stopping, changing lane, parking, giving way, and much more. This communication happens all the time on our streets today, and it happens in a matter of milliseconds through a complex and highly nuanced range of non-verbal cues. So, interaction makes our roads work and keeps us safe, but it also does something else. It allows us to trust in the vehicles around us. And this raises a whole set of new questions about interaction between people and vehicles. What about the people inside an autonomous car? Passengers will need to interact with autonomous vehicles from within so they can tell them where to go, when to unlock the doors, which music to play. So there are interactions between autonomous vehicles and road users, and autonomous vehicles and their passengers. We know that both have to work, but we don't yet know exactly how they'll work. Luckily, we're not alone in trying to find that out. This month, we've recruited a panel of experts to help us learn more about human-cab interaction. So let's meet them.
I'm Ronak Bose. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Humanizing Autonomy.
And?
My name is Balash Chuar. I work at DG Cities, and I'm the CAV lead and project manager for SML.
And finally?
My name is Kristen Fernandez-Medina, and I'm a senior psychologist for TRL.
For Ronak Bose at Humanizing Autonomy, the key to interaction is that it goes both ways.
This sort of communication is a two-way communication. So it's not just that the pedestrians have to understand what the cab wants to do, but the cab also needs to understand what the pedestrian wants to do, and it's a constant feedback loop.
The easiest part is working out a way for people to understand the autonomous vehicles.
The way that people tend to understand the intention of vehicle, not just cabs, will probably still be mostly on the body language of the vehicle itself. You can tell by the acceleration and deceleration of the vehicle what they're about to do. However, you still do have some human forms of communication, such as eye contact with the driver or some sort of flashing lights. And I think what we will see with cabs is this sort of interaction replicated with some sort of visual interface on the body of the car, or perhaps projected near the body of the car.
There are already lots of examples of what this might look like for real-life CAVs. Jaguar Land Rover has created a prototype with an external screen displaying a pair of eyes that look at pedestrians. The CAV's eye contact tells people when it's safe to cross. In the US, ride-hailing service Lyft has designed windows that display written messages to other road users. Ford had also been experimenting with visual interfaces, placing a light bar on the roof of their CAVs. This light flashes in a specific pattern to signify whether the vehicle is starting to go, yielding, or actively driving. And the results so far have been positive. People involved in the test have only needed to experience the light box twice before they learned what a single signal means. After 5 to 10 interactions with the light box, participants understood all three. But that was the easy bit. Getting humans to understand machine behaviour is far less complicated than teaching machines to interpret the full range of social signals that we as humans use. So how will CAVs learn to read human body language? Ronak has some ideas about this.
The way that we believe we can best understand the intentions and the actions of pedestrians is through using camera data. So what we do is we build software that uses computer vision to understand and predict the intention of pedestrians. So does this person want to cross the road? Is this person distracted on their mobile phone? What does that mean for the autonomous vehicle? So does the autonomous vehicle need to then slow down or swerve? These are all really important questions that need to be answered in order to get deployment of these CAVs in real cities.
While Ronak suggests data will enable autonomous vehicles to anticipate human behaviour, he also acknowledges that it's a complicated process because of the subtle differences between meanings in different cultures. We'll come back to this a bit later. Right now, it's important to understand the last piece in the feedback loop Ronak mentioned earlier. How will people know that they have been understood by an autonomous vehicle? As a pedestrian, when you step into the road, you want to know that the approaching vehicle is directly communicating with you and not the person behind you or someone next to you. And that's a big reason why 2/3 of people will make eye contact with the driver when they cross the road. You can tell that that driver has seen you. In the same way, people will need to know that their intentions are being read by CAVs. To have confidence on the road, you need to feel seen. Ronak learned this on a previous project he worked on.
One thing that we saw that worked well was the way that we showed individuals on the vehicle itself as a visual. So for example, people were quite good at understanding their own silhouette as a reflection. So we were able to make a sort of pixel reflection form of people, and people were able to identify themselves on the body of the vehicle with that. To make it not creepy, it's something that needs to be personal enough that people know that the vehicle is talking to them and communicating with them, and more importantly, understanding them and their intent. But it can't be so personal that you're almost sharing data that is not the vehicle's right. And this is where the anonymization and pseudonymization really comes into play.
Making use of data in the right way is a big part of the interaction challenge. The success of CAVs will be measured by how well they integrate into the existing mobility ecosystem within our cities. So we need to see autonomous vehicles joining up positively with walking and cycling, and this all starts by making other road users feel safe around driverless vehicles. But where are the passengers in all of this? While we've spoken at some length about other road users, it's important not to forget the people who will be sitting inside the CAVs too. Presumably, they'll also need to communicate with these vehicles. Balazs Chuvar, Senior Project Officer at DG Cities, has an interesting perspective on this. He points out that autonomous vehicles will be responsible for their passengers in some way.
When you get into a taxi, you currently have a taxi driver who kind of takes care of you. If in the future there's no taxi driver person, the taxi company still will have a responsibility to kind of take care of you and take you safely from A to B. So they will need to think about all their systems in a way that could be managed.
So how exactly might this communication between CAVs and passengers work? Balazs has some ideas.
You would do very similar things that you do today. You would have you know, immediate response through call centers. People would be able to, you know, video call or just voice call a call center or to get some help. You would potentially have sensors in the vehicle to pick up any abnormal behavior and, you know, report back on that so that you could get preemptive help as well. Vehicle can have screens where, you know, you are able to give a number of requests, you are able to say that something is really out of the ordinary and I need to just get out. I think the key things there will be that really it is managed by a service provider.
Again, of course, this rests on autonomous vehicles having a good understanding of human behaviour. This is incredibly complex because the meaning behind certain actions changes with context. Body language, just like spoken language, differs depending on where you are in the world. As somebody with experience working in Saudi Arabia, Georgia, Malaysia, and the UK, Balesh is very familiar with this.
If you drive around the world in different countries, people really, really do different things. And the norms can be quite widely apart. So there will definitely have to be some specific, country-specific or city-specific work to be done to make vehicles safe.
This is something that Ronak from Humanizing Autonomy has also observed.
When you're crossing the street in London, you tend to make eye contact with the driver. You tend to have some sort of acknowledgement that you both exist, and then you cross the road. If you go to India, it's almost exactly the opposite. You do not want to make eye contact with the driver, because if you do, you're almost yielding to the driver and the driver will go forward. So what you tend to do is you tend to look away from the driver and just cross with your hand out. And if you look at the observable features in both of these, they're the same. So from a CAV perspective, you're trying to see if the pedestrian is looking at you or not. But the output is completely different. So you would tune the models to act in a different way in India than they would in the UK.
Back to Balesh. He says that CAV trials should engage with as many different road interactions as possible from a diverse range of people in order for the vehicles to learn to understand everyone.
Essentially, just you recruit trial participants from all sorts of life. And well, in SMLL and in other projects that we are doing in the CAV world, this is exactly what us as DG Cities have been doing, is kind of signing of participants from, you know, all different demographic groups to trial different ages. You need people who potentially have different disabilities to be able to feed back into how a certain service or how a certain vehicle or how a certain, you know, way of giving a message should be designed. So you get a wide range of feedback. And I think that needs to be in the approach that OEMs are taking, because, you know, otherwise not everybody can use your vehicle, or not everybody can understand it. And that just limits the size of the market that you can aim.
The testing stage is also very important for ensuring that driverless vehicles interact with people in a way that inspires trust. It's a big leap from the cars of today to the connected autonomous vehicles of tomorrow. Waymo, Google's autonomous car venture, currently uses in-car screens to show occupants an animated version of what the vehicle is seeing. The displays also explain what the car is doing, like if it's pausing to allow a human to cross. Balesh points out that while this is valuable for the transition period from today's cars to CAVs, it might not always be necessary.
Maybe at the very beginning, you sit in the autonomous car the first time around, you're quite interested in seeing what it sees. The 10th time, novelty, you know, fades away and you just want to get from A to B. Potentially, you know, vehicles could provide a safety message at the beginning, same as, you know, airplanes do today, where you would say, you know, this vehicle operates such a way that if you want to get out, you need to press the big red button at the top of the roof. I expect that these systems will be developed by service providers, and some of them will be safer or kind of perform better in terms of accidents than others, and then the whole industry will adopt them. And we very much hope that in SMLL, these are the sort of things that we will be able to test.
So it seems that interactions between humans and driverless vehicles will change over time as we learn what to expect from each other. TRL's senior psychologist, Kristen Fernandez Medina, echoes this point. She says that humans will adapt to these new forms of transport, just as they have in the past.
Humans are very adaptable, and we have adapted the way that we behave in the transport environment based on 100 years of having cars on the roads. Before that, there would have been different adaptations to how people interacted with horse and carriage. So I think what we will see is that, gradually we're going to see an adaptation of how we behave. People are going to become more conditioned to seeing automated vehicles within their transport environment, and it's likely that actually we'll develop new rules for interacting with that new environment and with these new vehicles.
Kristin also talks about the factors that determine whether people take up new tech. This is something called the diffusion of technology theory, but I'll let Kristin explain how it works.
If you think about some of the theories around the acceptance of technology, the diffusion of innovation theory is one that gets used fairly often, and it's been used in the EV context. It talks about factors that are believed to be important in the uptake, or as they call it, the diffusion of new technologies within social circles. Triability is one of the concepts that is presented, and that relates very much to the opportunity to interact and experiment with the technology. There are also other factors that are believed to predict the uptake of new technology. So things like relative advantage, to the degree to which a new technology is thought to be better than what it's replacing, as well as, compatibility. How does this new tech, how does this new idea fit in with my individual needs, my values? And that, not just relates to the transport needs, but also, thinking widely about what people are after when it comes to new technologies. So we start seeing a picture where actually, a lot of this revolves around the human experience and how much, of this needs to go back to the end user.
For Kristin, then, CAVs will only be valuable if people have a good experience using them. And this, as we said at the very beginning, leads back to interaction.
It's not just all up to developing a system, that has to be accompanied by the appropriate behavioral research. And I know I'm biased in saying that, but it is really important. And I think that point about it doesn't matter how innovative, exciting, shiny, amazing these new technologies are, if people don't use them, then there's very little point to it. Certainly if we want to see the uptake in the numbers that we're seeing projected, and in numbers that cities like London need to see in order to start, getting those congestion levels and down those, the pollution down, to start making those really positive changes, it's all about opting for sustainable choices. And that in itself implies a decision from people. People have to make that decision. And that's why the research is really important.
For all their potential benefits, self-driving vehicles will only make a difference to our cities if we actually make use of them. As we've heard in this episode, interaction will be really important to increasing levels of usability. Like Kristin suggests, this is something we can only achieve with rigorous and diverse testing, which is, of course, exactly the kind of thing that Smart Mobility Living Lab exists to do. But what about our big question? How will humans interact with self-driving vehicles? Well, we don't yet know the finer details of how humans and cabs will communicate. It could be through flashing lights, voice, screens inside the car, or interpreted body language, or in fact a combination of all of these things. Many of these options are currently being tested, and it's unclear which will come out on top. But all of our experts agreed on one thing, that cabs have to communicate in a way that everyone understands, no matter where they are in the world. When we talk about human interaction, we really are speaking about the full scope of humanity, including all types of road users and passengers with different backgrounds and needs. Inclusivity is consequently the major challenge facing cab developers today. But it needn't be daunting. As Kristin pointed out, people are extremely adaptable. It's likely that the way we interact with self-driving vehicles will keep changing as the vehicles and the infrastructure around them become more developed and we become more accustomed to sharing our roads with them. After all, language evolves over time, and even the term cab is a good example of this. The principle is the same when it comes to communicating with self-driving vehicles. While the first passengers of autonomous vehicles might like visuals depicting what is happening on the outside, later users might be happier to chat with their cab. Similarly, the first road users to encounter cabs might prefer to read messages from the body of the vehicle, which future generations might discard in favour of flashing light boxes, or indeed a projected pair of eyes. These changes are all ahead of us. When it comes to the shared language of people and autonomous vehicles, we're only at the very start of our journey. That's it for this episode of Journey Makers. We hope you've enjoyed travelling with us through our investigation into the topic of human interaction. Next month, we'll be facing another big question on the future of mobility, namely the issue of cybersecurity in a world of connected cars. In the meantime, you'll find Journey Makers wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you've got a big question you'd like to hear us tackle in another episode, then send us a tweet at @SMLL_London. Until next time, see you in the future. How will you be getting there?